Corruption Busters for the best in crime-fighting radio.
Hello and welcome to the show. You're listening to Corruption Busters. I'm Chad Thomas and you're listening to Chai FM, broadcasting in Johannesburg on 101.9 FM and streaming worldwide on chaifm.com. Got a great show today. We're going to be chatting to Kenny Niemek about the taxi industry. The taxi industry has always been something in South Africa that's been tumultuous. It's been something that is interesting, considering it's one of the biggest informal employers in the country and also one of the biggest generators of income. But there is always problems, whether it is with your minibus taxis fighting against bus routes, fighting against the Rea Vaya, and now, of course, what's going on with the online apps such as Uber fighting against the meter taxis. So a little bit later in the show, we'll be chatting to Kenny Niemek about that. This past weekend was the Youth Weekend. It was celebrating June 16th, which was the 1976 uprising in Soweto, which then spread countrywide. And, of course, I thought, with it being Youth Weekend, it would be very important for us to discuss the importance of the youth in South Africa, especially what we refer to as the so-called born frees. For those that don't know what a born frees are defined by the South African Institute of Race Relations as South Africans born since February 1990. Now, obviously, in February 1990 was when de Klerk had already issued various instructions and passed legislation to decriminalize the belonging of certain parties, where in the past, if you belong to a party such as the South African Communist Party, or if you belong to a ZAPU, if you belong to the African National Congress, it was a banned party, you were immediately guilty of an offense, you could be arrested. So there were various political parties that were unbanned. And of course, it began the whole release of political prisoners from the late 1980s, in 89 specifically, when Sisulu and some of those were released, all the way through to February 1990 when Nelson Mandela was released. So born frees are defined by the South African Institute of Race Relations as South Africans who were born since February 1990. And there are some very current and comprehensive stats on the state of young South Africa. For example, born frees number 27 million. That's almost half of all South Africans. What's quite sad is 3 million of South Africa's 19 million children have lost one or both parents. 40% of babies that are born in 2015, that's 2 years ago, will make it to 65 years of age. The rest will die before that. But, you know, that is a great benchmark if you look at what the average age in South Africa was up until a few years ago. One-third of youngsters aged between 15 and 9 live in households where there is total unemployment. That is very, very sad. One-third of youngsters aged 15 to 19 live in households of total unemployment. Working-age unemployment amongst born frees, males 67% unemployed, females, this is shocking, 75% of females in the born free category that make up the age where they can work are unemployed. Black Africans are now two-thirds of university students, and although that sounds incredible, that's only 16% of black Africans between the ages of 20 to 24. 38% of students starting university do get a degree. That's less than half. 38% of students who start university will land up with a degree. That means that there's a significant amount of 62% that will not qualify. Almost one-third of prisoners in South Africa. Now, this is frightening. Almost one-third of prisoners. That means they've been found guilty of an offense. They are not awaiting trial. Are aged between 14 and 25. 45,000 born frees are in prison at any one time. Less than one-third of 18 and 19-year-old bother to vote. Now, that's very interesting, because why is that? And that's what we saw the EFF trying to capture. And we were actually quite surprised to see the EFF captured another vote demographic. But the EFF were aiming for that demographic. Yet it says less than one-third of 18 to 19-year-olds bother to vote. An important thing from the annual South Africa survey, which is also published by the South African Institute of Race Relations, is that in 2008, and that's the latest figure available, almost 80% of urban white children were growing up in households containing both parents. But for the urban African children, the figure was only 28%, a generation without fathers being present. And thinking about yesterday being Father's Day, that is a very poignant figure. I'd like to remind you the views expressed on the show are not necessarily those of Chai FM or its management. And a little bit later in the show, we're going to be talking about some other statistics which may actually make you feel a little bit better than those youth.
Join the Corruption Busters for the best in crime-fighting radio.
You're listening to Corruption Busters, and we were just talking about some really frightening figures about the youth in South Africa who are really, really disenfranchised. Not just are they themselves not voting, but they don't have the hope for the future. The unemployment amongst young South Africans is incredible. 75% of women in that category who are employable being unemployed, and 68% of males who are employable in that category being unemployable. Gibbs did a youth survey which was entitled Youth Optimism Dashed by Political and Economic Uncertainty. And the summary of that was that just 5 years ago, the annual Gibbs Youth Survey highlighted a society that was upbeat about the future and their career prospects. Back then, 74% of learners felt South Africa was a good place to have a successful career. However, in 2017, just 53% of respondents said they plan to build a future in the country. The about turn is a consequence of political infighting, rating downgrades, the recent news that South Africa has slipped into recession, and an unemployment rate of 27.7% across the board. However, and this is what's so frightening, at the present moment, South Africans under the age of 25, who account for 51.5% of the population, are hardest hit by unemployment. And I've said this in the show before, this is a ticking time bomb. This is a problem that needs to be addressed. The biggest sector of our nation is unemployed. It is the biggest voting bloc in the country. These are the people that are the leaders of tomorrow, and they are finding themselves unemployed. And there are so many contributing factors, and we need to take a long, hard look. Talking about employment, one of the biggest employers in South Africa in the informal sector are minibus taxis. And minibus taxis are everywhere. And whether you love them or hate them, they provide an important way for our South African workers to get to work. As commuters, these guys are reliant on minibus taxis. And minibus taxis seem to have got a free pass all the time. They were even given, the owners thereof were even given shares in the Rea Vaya or the BRTs, bus rapid transport systems, because they were busy shooting up these buses to stop these routes from taking shape. But what we've seen an emergence of in South Africa was middle-class South Africa taking advantage of taxis like normal meter taxis. Taxis that I grew up with in Hillbrow. We had Rose's taxis, we had Maxi taxi, we had Flash taxi. And taxis were an integral part of our movements in those days. If we wanted to go to clubs after hours, there were no buses, there was no public transport, and we would rely on taxis if we didn't have a driver's license, we didn't have a mate that we could all pile into his car if he was fortunate enough to have a car. And we've seen a resurgence of meter taxis, but meter taxis seem to have taken a bit of a knock of late because of the growth in online apps like Taxify and Uber, where you can now order a taxi app. This guy arrives. It's quite nondescript. It doesn't have much branding on it, if any branding at all. And off you go in this taxi, and it's all wonderful. It's all computerized. Everything is digital. But it seems to have really upset the Meter Taxi Association. Now, believe it or not, there is a Meter Taxi Association. And when you hear the figures of how big meter taxis are in South Africa, you are going to be flabbergasted. So joining us after the break is Kenny Niemek. And Kenny Niemek, you all know from the show previously, he is a presenter, he is a radio commentator, a TV sports commentator, and an ex-star South African soccer player. Well, he is now the chief operations officer for a meter taxi app, as well as the lead brand ambassador. When we come back, we're going to be talking to him all about what's happening in the Meter Taxi Association.
Join the Corruption Busters for the best in crime-fighting radio.
You're listening to Corruption Busters. I'm Chad Thomas, and I'm joined by a very old friend. You won't like the word old, but we've been friends for so many years, Kenny Niemek. It's always interesting to have Kenny. Kenny, as you're aware, was a star South African soccer player. He coached football overseas. He then came back. He had his own radio show on Radio 2000 for FIFA 2010 World Cup called 2010 and Beyond. And of course, he was a very well-known commentator on Supersport who would cry when his team Liverpool lost, which I'm sure was quite a lot of crying. A lot of tears were shed. Kenny, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Chad.
Always good to have you on air. In fact, you introduced me to the radio waves by having me as your guest presenter on 2010 and Beyond on Radio 2000.
Absolutely. Fond memories. Certainly was an interesting time. And well, it's nice to see that you've carried the baton, so to speak, and you're still on radio, and you're doing a splendid job, I must add, especially talking about some of the stats a bit early on. Certainly was surprising, though. I mean, being Father's Day, it is a bit hurtful, though, to think the situation is so dire.
you know what? It's dire in that people turn a blind eye. If it doesn't impact on us directly, we don't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And what people don't realize, it's an explosion waiting to happen. We've got massive unemployment amongst the youth.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a disparity between the have and have nots that grows on a daily basis. And you've got a situation where the youth don't have dreams for tomorrow.
Correct, yes.
They're stuck in a rut. And you see an explosion in teenage pregnancies, an explosion in HIV amongst the youth and STDs amongst the youth, an explosion in the use of illicit narcotics, like mm-hmm. in Yorpe.
Yes. But I think most of the issues stem from the family, the orientation. What is family? Well, you know, the rules have all been chucked out the window previously. Family was a big thing. You know, people sat at the table, they ate together, they spoke together. I mean, these sort of things got to start at home, and then it's got to enter the schools, and they've taken religion out of the schools. I mean, so it's downhill. So these are the things that keep people fundamentally in check. And if you take away the balances, there's going to be problems.
You know, what you said is so important. My mom, although we were a very small family, it was my mom, myself, and my gran, she would insist we eat together, we mm-hmm. pray together. And it was so important to get around that table. And I can just imagine today's tables where it's hard enough to get the kids around the table with you, but now you've got the interruption of social media.
Social media, television, all that. So you're not getting that interaction, and you're not getting you know, the insight of what actually happened today. What was your day like? You know, just give me some feedback. Tell me, what did you do today? So at least that way I can contribute in some way to your development. Because if there isn't any communication, how can I contribute? And the parents and the children are being drawn apart by technology, which is actually quite sad.
I remember there was an expression, a family that prays together stays together. Mm-hmm. I change it to a family that eats together, because eating is such an integral part of life. It's something that you need to sustain life, and it's an opportunity for everybody to get together. And that, if you look at the Jewish community with a Shabbos dinner mm-hmm. on a Friday night,
yes.
and your Christians that get together for Sunday lunch, that is so critical. It is so important.
Absolutely.
And it's sad that people are losing sight of these traditions.
Because what it does, it also maintains the respect and the hierarchy, the family hierarchy. That is essential, because these days that isn't there. So kids are at their own will, and they do what they feel like. You don't have somebody there who's able to regulate behavior and to give them the sort of guidance that they actually need. So this is a problem.
And I think a lot of parents, being so busy trying to make money, etc., having the kids do their own thing, having the kids engrossed in television or online, it kind of is a babysitter for the parents. It's like, okay, fine, the kid's busy, they're not bugging me, mm-hmm. I can get on doing what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And people need to make that time.
You absolutely do. And I think on a daily basis, I think it's pertinent that parents are involved in their kids' lives. Not just so much in the education aspect, in other aspects, because there are lots of other things that go on, you know, that just fly past you because you're not aware, you're not communicating, so you don't understand what's going on. There's bullying, there's lots of issues that kids go through. These days, kids are bombarded with stuff. They're bombarded by advertisers, by technology, by so much that they have to carry. Unlike when we were growing up, we could go and climb trees, and we had things to do that were different, you know, and you weren't distracted with so many things like they are today. And then they still have to go through that workload to compete, to succeed. And, of course, to impress the parents as well. So it's very tough being young these days.
How old is your daughter now?
She just turned 18.
You're joking.
Yeah.
Time has flown, hey?
Absolutely has.
I remember her running around as a toddler. Yeah. And she's 18 now.
Yeah.
And with that, she's now an adult, comes a whole new set of challenges.
Yeah, but, you know, you got to admire the way she's become so grounded. But essential, like I'm saying, is to always talk. Is to always get their point of view. Don't bombard them and put things on them. Hear what they have to say, because clearly they're a different generation. They think differently, and they're very smart. Don't ever, you know, underestimate their intelligence.
Those figures of the so-called born frees that are in prison and the numbers that will see prison during their lifetime was a rude awakening just now. And it's something we need to address. And that's why we need to bring through into the formal sector all these different informal forms of employment that are taking place. So we talk about the townships being a massive informal market and trading center. But if you look at transport in South Africa, specifically the transport sector, such as taxis, for example, mm-hmm. it's something that needs to be brought in. Mm-hmm. Now, in South Africa, we had a major protest last week. I think it was Thursday or was it Thursday? It was Thursday mm-hmm. where the minibus taxis closed off all the roads leading into Johannesburg. Mm-hmm. And they did this because of the old recapitalization program, because they claim that Toyota, which is the taxi of choice, is charging them exorbitant rates. But there is more than just the minibus taxis in South Africa. There's meter taxis. Now, for our listeners' benefit, how many meter taxis belong to associations in South Africa?
You're looking at 180,000, roughly, nationally. It's a massive figure, absolutely massive. And you know, let's start there. These people are or find themselves in a situation where the technology has come in. We're thankful for the technology, but the manner in which the technology itself has been brought into the market has operated as a parallel business. It's excluded them in many ways. It's actually come to destroy them and their livelihood. You know, these people pay for the routes, and you get another company that comes in. We're not going to mention who they are, but they come in and they, via an application, now go and start taking business that belongs to people who've paid for that right to operate. So therein starts the first problem. And then what happens is they also pay for the meter taxi license itself. So this is supposed to be regulated by government, and this wasn't. So to a certain point, maybe government should have did this. They should have regulated the industry. And this is what we're trying to do now. Regulate the industry so that there is a fixed pricing, so that nobody's going to be cheated, first and foremost. Secondly, it is fair to the Meter Taxi Association. And this is what I think essentially the fight has been all about. The fact that another company can come, they can launch an application. They don't have to pay for the right to operate, but they're operating. So they're using technology to bypass what fundamentally are the rules of government. So government itself needs to step in and needs to try and find a solution. This is why we as Yuku have come on board with the Meter Taxi Association. We've developed the technology, but it's not just the technology. You've got to train these drivers. You've got to give them a different ethos. They've got to understand how to now deal with their customers and their clients. We got to change their cars. You know, so we are now engaging with corporate. We are talking to a couple of banks. We are talking to people. We are also talking to government to try and assist.
Kenny, when we come back, for the benefit of our listeners, I want you to explain to us what exactly a meter taxi is and how they fit in to the dynamic of public transport and transport that's available to Joe Blog in the streets.
Join the Corruption Busters for the best in crime-fighting radio.
You're listening to Corruption Busters. I'm Chad Thomas, and I'm in conversation today with Kenny Niemack, who represents a organization which is also an app called Yuku Ride, and this is specifically for the meter taxi industry. Now, we've been discussing what's going on, but I think the reality is what one has been seeing in the media. One hears about meter taxi drivers being upset with other organizations, international organizations that have come into South Africa, seem to be charging less than them, seem to be getting a lot more of their business based on the fact that they have this online app that is so popular worldwide, and it's resulted in violence. We've heard about cars being petrol bombed, we've heard about cars being stoned, we've heard about shootings that are taking place. But it's also, now that taxis are back in the forefront, we're also hearing about these online apps that come from overseas where drivers themselves have been accused of a lot of things. What came out in the media today, I heard it on the way to the studio, was that on Friday, a couple in Cape Town took this very popular app and ordered a taxi via this app, the international app. And the girl was clearly Muslim. The boy was clearly a Western Christian. And when she got out the car at a shop to go get something, the driver started to chastise the boyfriend, wanting to know how he could go out with a Muslim woman and what right did he have to go out with a Muslim woman, etc. And this escalated into a fight. And when the woman came back to the car, they were both kicked out. And then, of course, we saw more recently a video of a black lady that was kicked out of a taxi, also one of these online app taxis, mm-hmm. and she was actually beaten by the driver. Now, is this because there's so many more people using these vehicles, or is it because we now have cell phones that can do videos and pictures?
I think it's, a lot of it also stems from frustration. I mean, it's abhorrent behavior. I mean, it's not something that we condone. But therein lies the problem, because these people are first and foremost overworked. The driver has no benefit. The business model itself only benefits the company who owns the application.
Now, let's distinguish what we're talking about here. You're here to discuss meter taxis, which you're going to explain to us now, versus this very popular international online app that has been banned in some countries.
Correct. That's the reason why it's being banned, because the benefit is not to the driver. It's not to the industry itself. It doesn't develop. It doesn't promote. What it actually does, it exploits. And this is what we're trying to stop. The idea of this is for you to grow your business. So if we're going to give you an application, this is why we're calling for regulation. Nothing wrong with the technology of having an application. Simply, it's to facilitate you getting a ride. And that, for us, we agree with. No problem. But the issue is the pricing. The issue is the hours those drivers are working. These are people who are working 18 hours a day. They've got to pay for those cars. And 25% of what they make weekly goes to the parent company.
And there's no benefits.
And there's no benefits. So I mean, we've got to stop this nonsense. You know, end of the day, our people have got to come first. We've got to consider this. We've also got to consider the implications of tax. You've got to consider the implications of where the money's going to. It's going out of the country. We are currently in a recession. You know, we got to hold the brakes on things a bit and say, you know what? Let our people come first. Donald Trump is preaching the same thing. Why don't we? You know, we got to wake up a bit. There's nothing wrong with South African technology. Yuku Technologies has produced a wonderful app that can perform all the functions. And we've got a security panic button that is on there as well. That's never been done in this country like we have it done and built. So there's a lot still to come out. And we want people to actually start to go out to the website, have a look at the website, start exploring what we as South Africans have developed, because we're proud of what we have done at Yuku. And, you know, you go to www.ride.yuku.org. Yuku is Y-O-O-K-O-O. It just means you, infinite. So it's endless. The possibilities are endless.
Kenny, you said something that struck a chord with me, and it concerned me big time. You said to me that some of the drivers on this international app are working upwards of 18 hours a day.
It's ridiculous. We actually did research for the better part of about 6 to 7 months, going and interviewing, talking to these drivers, trying to understand, because at the end of the day, once this gets regulated and gets launched, then you'll find bulk of those drivers going to want to come onto the system, because they have to go and get the meter licenses. They have to become a part of a company who's operating under the auspices of government, because this is what it is. This is not a lawless state. So once that happens, they are going to have to come in. So you have to go and talk to them to find out what are their grievances. You know, I mean, you know, it just looks rosy from the outside because it's good PR. But the facts of the matter is it's not rosy. It's difficult for them to survive.
180,000 meter taxis in South Africa is a lot. And are they already in the mainstream economy? Are they paying their tax? Are they working the correct hours? And are there regulations in place?
Absolutely are. You know, if you look at the 2010 World Cup, these are the same taxi guys who drove international visitors without query, without problems. They've been servicing the communities for close on 40 years. I've spoken to many of them, and they said their businesses have suffered tremendously. People complain and say, oh, they've got old cars. They've got old cars because they've had to pay for those routes, which can go up to 100,000 rand for the route. For you to be in Sandton to park your four cars there, it costs money. And who collects this money? Government, because it is the law. So if somebody wants to operate outside of that and come and take food off your table, surely there's going to be a grievance.
So can I make an analogy? And it may be a simplistic analogy, but a lot of people that are listening to the show have had their hair cut by people who are registered, who've gone through the registration process of being an EPI, learning to cut hair, and then joining the respective government organization and paying their levies to cut hair. Mm-hmm. Along come a whole lot of guys from overseas, and they open up tiny little shops with a pair of scissors and a razor blade, mm-hmm. and they now are undercutting the market because the hairdresser themselves is having to pay to be legitimate.
Correct. But look, if you're looking at the picture, it disrupts the market. Understand that the taxi industry is demand and supply. If we have too many cars in a certain vicinity, a certain radius, all of a sudden, you've got a situation where you're actually making less as an owner, and then it becomes more difficult for you to pay for that new car that people are looking for. But we are trying to address the issues. The only way this can happen is because it has been demarcated already by government. Those areas are already in existence. It's already been paid and sold to the Meter Taxi Association. They buy the right to operate in certain areas. And they already know how many taxis can only operate in that area. So when you get a parallel business that comes and floods the market, all of a sudden, it changes the entire dynamics. So when we start to talk about regulation, we start to look at all those issues and see how we can reintegrate all those who are operating outside of the auspices of government.
I mentioned and I gave a very silly analogy of the hairdresser barber in the formal sector versus these guys that have come from overseas that are undercutting price, etc. But what we don't see are hairdressers taking their scissors and their razor blades and going to these other barber shops and having fights with these people. Mm-hmm. Why do you think there's violence in the transport industry in South Africa? Is it a legacy? Why do we see people's cars getting burnt out, cars getting stoned, people getting shot?
I have asked that question because as a technology company, Yuku Technology completely condones violence. We believe in mediated talks. We believe in trying to come to an understanding and an agreement. The reason is of the frustration, because these people have been severely affected financially. Some of them have been ruined. Some have even closed their companies. This is how severe this has been, and they've taken a hard knock. So the frustration levels are certainly high. And what you find, where it's happened like in Park Station and all these areas, they've been specifically warned not to enter these areas, but they've gone out and they've entered these areas deliberately. So if they're going to go and look for trouble, they're going to get it. And these are the issues we're trying to solve, to try and get these people to understand. If you go into a place that has already been demarcated and paid for by another group, it doesn't mean that you have the right to go there and to claim that business. And this is what they've done. And that is why we've seen the violence. That is why you've seen an escalation of violence, because it's as if I don't quite care that you are there. I'm coming because I have an application, and that doesn't work.
That is all very interesting, but what's more important for me is the fact that we have a group of individuals that have, over the years, entrenched themselves and have suddenly, because of something from overseas, been disenfranchised once again. Mm-hmm. And it's something that can't be tolerated. But the obvious question would have been at the outset of this, why didn't they just join this new organization from overseas?
Well, this new organization didn't take the time to sit with them and to understand how they could actually work with them, first and foremost. They thought it prudent to rather open up something parallel because it'll cost them less. It'll be more cost effective because they understood the industry itself needed to be renewed. This is why I say the involvement of government is essential. Like they did the old recapitalization program, they need to do exactly the same thing now. But at the same time, they need to regulate in terms of pricing and the laws. Need to be regulated. Once this gets done, then you find that you're not going to have these issues and these problems. And for us who built the technology, our concern is the paying public. We are concerned for their safety. That is what we worry about. That is why we've also developed the security feature on the application itself. So if there is a problem, one can react and one can respond as quickly as possible.
Nikki sent us a message here. She said, I needed to go a distance of 6 kilometers. I phoned a taxi. I was quoted 150 Rand. The international online app charged me 70 Rand. No choice. Even though I try support taxis. And that's from Nikki. Mm-hmm. What is your take on that?
I do agree with you, Nikki, because the thing is, like I'm saying, as long as it's not regulated, we cannot have a fixed pricing. So that way it's not going to be standard. So you'll find an individual could overcharge you. It just depends on the time. But all these things will be, when you talk about regulation, once that comes from government, we can actually install that on the application itself. So before you even book the ride, you yourself will have a clear understanding of how much you're going to pay from point A to point B before you even book the ride. So it's important that regulation is an absolute must, actually.
Nikki, I hope that answered your question. Before we take our break, we're at the halfway mark of the show. I'd like to remind you that you can take part in the conversation like Nikki has. You can WhatsApp us 062-148-2374. You can send us an SMS 34519, or you can tweet us at Chai FM. Share with us your stories. Have you been in a meter taxi? Was it a good story? Was it a bad story? Have you been in in a taxi operated by this well-known international brand? Tell us your stories. Tell us your experiences. That WhatsApp line again, 062-148-2374. You can SMS us 34519, or you can tweet at Chai FM.
Join the Corruption Busters for the best in crime-fighting radio.
You're listening to Corruption Busters on Chai FM. I'm Chad Thomas in conversation with Kenny Nemec. Before we start our conversation, we're chatting about the stats in South Africa, specifically pertaining to the youth and where we are going as a country. But it's not always just bad news. South Africa also has a good story to tell, and I'd like to share this with you because it's not been that long since the dawn of democracy. And you must understand that the ruling party at that stage inherited a fundamentally a country that was broke. We didn't have money. We didn't have international contracts. And as much as people don't want to admit this and they're in a state of denial, this country was fundamentally broke. And you had Mandela go out onto the world stage. He held out the bowl, not the begging bowl, because we gave back a lot in terms of our mining infrastructure, in terms of what South Africa has to offer. But a lot of investment came into South Africa. A lot of this investment has been spread across the board. So when I say there's good news, I'd like to quote from Paul Pereira's latest background on Young SA, which came out this weekend. It's called the Wham Backgrounder on Young SA. And if you want to listen to Paul Pereira, he's on Radio Today every Thursday at 6 p.m. And he presents stats that are very important to South Africa. So let's talk about what's happened to the black community in South Africa in the past few years. What he's done is very interesting. He's put categories down here. So it's called catching up fast. Africans earning equal or more than whites. In 2000, it was 270,000. In 2013, it was 1.3 million, which was an increase of 378%. And by 2020, it'll be 5.1 million, which is more, blacks than there are whites in South Africa that'll be earning more than whites. Now, that still is a sad figure, that there are still more whites and whites still earn more than blacks in South Africa. But you can see a marked improvement. In 2013, it was already up by 378%. And by 2020, blacks earning more than whites will surpass that. Owning more things. Well, in terms of living standard measures, you know, your LSMs from 2001 to 2012, let's see, talk about LSM1, owning the least. This dropped from 11% to 2%. So in other words, those that earned the least and were basically on the margins of society have dropped, which is phenomenal. They've dropped from 11% to 2%. Your LSM2s have dropped from 14% to 5%, and your LSM3s from 14% to 5%. South Africa's getting healthier. We had the world's largest ARV rollout. New AIDS infections are down every year since 2000. SA is only one of two sub-Saharan countries with 95% properly nourished children. School feeding is now in 80% of schools, and social welfare grants are now sitting on 16.5 million. Moving up, Africans that have shares on the JSE is now 61% from 2000 to 2010. That's an increase of 61% of Africans owning shares on the JSE. Black small business ownership has increased by 83%. That was in 2010. And black directorships have increased by 83% as well, and that is on the JSE. A new residential black middle class, people that are moving into the so-called middle class bracket, your black diamonds, taken by area around the country. Polokwane has gone from 30% to 64%. Midrand's gone from 53% to 62%. Kempton Park from 33% to 50%. Centurion 14% to 43%. And Durban Berea from 33% to 53%. African mobility. Well, the African proportion of employed has increased by 15% since 1994. The numbers of Africans has increased from 1994 by a whopping 97%. Africans in top management, 2000 was sitting at 6%, and the last study in 2012 was sitting at 12%. That's top management. African car ownership from 2004 to 2012 has increased by 121%. African cell phone use has increased from 2004 to 2012 by a whopping 223%. And African-owned business in South Africa from 2002 to 2013 has increased by 23%. But later in the show, I'm going to give you some more facts and figures. And this is all, of course, in keeping with our theme of it being youth this past weekend. We'll be back with Kenny Nemec straight after this.
Join the Corruption Busters for the best in crime-fighting radio.
You're listening to Corruption Busters live on Chai FM. I'm Chad Thomas, and with me is Kenny Nemec. Thank you for your messages. I've got two here that are of interest. One says, meter taxis are ripping off the public they then mentioned two of the well-known online apps that have standard rates that make sense. They say anyone constituting violence should be dealt with by the police. You can't fight technology. Thank you for that. Please give a name. And then we have another one, Uber. Have a problem. You can't phone them. Can you also discuss the issue of tipping a meter or Uber driver? The taxi I use also don't have meters anymore. Okay, so your meter taxis, do they have to have meters?
It's not necessary, but in discussions with them, they say they would like to have the meters because just in case you have a failure of the application. So they want to have something that can back it up. Now, this is why we say, because we're providing them with the technology, they also will be regulated. So just like the companies you're currently using now, they are regulated by the application. So because we've designed the application for the Meter Taxi Association, all of a sudden, you yourself will be able to have the right to choose because you will know exactly how much you're going to pay for your ride from A to B. That's all it is.
So basically what you're saying is the following. Yuku Ride is going to help regulate the regulated meter taxi industry even more because now there's an underlying app that will manage the actions of the driver.
I couldn't have said it better, Chad. I mean, that's what you want, don't you? And that helps not only the industry. It helps government in terms of collection of tax. It also safeguards the person who's being driven around so they know how to budget. If they're going to use this as a regular service, you find that it's a lot easier for them to budget. Many, many pluses. There's nothing going to be taken away here. We got to commend the technology that has come in. It's opened our eyes to a new way of thinking and a new way. More people now are using taxis than they've ever used, simply because of the technology. So we are just saying we want to regulate it. We want the Meter Taxi Association to be on par with what has been offered in the market.
I think what people are losing sight of, and this is so critical for them to understand, is the reason why the meter taxi at this point in time is more expensive than the international online app that everybody's downloaded locally is because they have far more hidden costs. They have to pay for their route. They have to pay for their position at the taxi rank. They have to pay to have somebody in the control center with the radio. They have to pay for the actual radios because they're in radio communication with their control room. They have to advertise in newspapers. They have to advertise in pamphlets at the airport, at the Gautrain, etc. And those hidden costs is why a meter taxi is more expensive. But at least with a meter taxi driver, you know who's driving you.
Absolutely. That's another issue. You've got 75% of the drivers for these other companies are foreign drivers. So they've come and they've taken essentially jobs from South Africans. I'm not being xenophobic, but I'm being realistic. That is why you've got to regulate the industry, because those people, have they paid for a meter taxi license? Have they paid to operate? No, they haven't. But they've come in, opened up a parallel business, and all of a sudden they've taken a lion's share of the market. You've mentioned the costs associated with these meter taxi associations trying to live in the industry. They've got to pay for those permits. Those permits are expensive, and they get those permits from government. If it was the other way around, I promise you, if the other company was buying those permits to operate, their prices will not be that cheap.
So help me to understand this. The online apps that people are currently using that make use of drivers that aren't from the Meter Taxi Association, those drivers obviously need to have a PDP. But apart from that, you're telling me that they don't have the normal permits that your taxi drivers have?
Absolutely not. They are considered illegal, and they're considered illegal from government themselves. They've considered them illegal. And the thing is, you must understand something. The application is called an e-hailing application. What it does, it unites a passenger and it unites a driver. Essentially, it says, this is my location. Come and pick me up. What is the cost? So we want to provide this exact same technology to the Meter Taxi Association so at least they can compete. But we also have other additions on there to ensure that the public are also safe at the same time. So if there is an accident, if there is an incident, one can respond. One can act, because we have a panic button that is also on there. That certainly is going to make this a wonderful feature indeed and give it lots of value. And then the safety of the passenger, once again, that issue is being dealt with, at least.
Do you foresee government taking a bigger role now? Because they've obviously been very concerned with what's happening with regards to buses on national routes. They've been very concerned with the violence that's been supposedly perpetrated by minibus taxi drivers onto the BRTs and the rear vias. Is this not just more for them, or do you think they're taking their role the way they should, and that is serious?
Absolutely. I think the technology is actually here to assist them if they approach it correctly. Like I say, the regulation itself is going to assist, because then you know exactly who's on the road. We've got biometrics that we've set up, so each one of the drivers are going to be vetted. Every single stat on him is going to be on the system. So when you are actually booking a ride, all his information will come up on there, will come up onto the phone. So you can see, you can either choose this driver or decline this driver. That's one aspect. The other aspect, by vetting the drivers, any criminal record will be on the system. So we have that discretion not to use this particular person. We do not want criminals or a criminal element being involved in the taxi industry, because we have to consider the safety of the passenger. This is the reason why we are doing what we are doing, and why it's taken us so long to get to this point. It is a serious business. We've got to train these people. We've got to get them ready for the market again. We've got to make them understand the technology. We've got to teach them how to use the cell phone. We've got to teach them also how to use the application. And then we've also got to teach them how do the payment systems work. All these are the essentials that take time for us to actually inculcate in the old drivers, because these are not young boys. You know, they're not your millennials. They're slightly older. They've been in the industry for a while, and you've got to have patience with them, and you've got to teach them the correct way.
Do they have plans to bring in new blood to have a training of the youth that will be able to replace them? Because it would be obviously natural attrition, and with the growth in the industry, like you've said, and with certain applications becoming illegal in certain cities, we can see that people are now used to taxis. Mm-hmm. Has the Metre Taxi Association taken cognizance of this, and are they preparing to have a new generation of drivers in place?
They absolutely have. You know, when we discussed this with them prior, we spoke about them being trained. We spoke about them understanding how to use the technology, how to approach the customers and the clients. We currently have a course that we are doing via CETA that actually addresses most of these issues. So whoever else is new that is coming onto the system first has to go through the entire vetting process. He has to buy his meter taxi license. He has to be part of the association. He has to join one of the companies. They have to be a permit holder to operate in a certain demarcated area. These are all the requirements that have to be met before one can actually operate in this industry. This is the law by government. It is not a law created by the Metre Taxi Association. It was always there. So we are saying that now government needs to step in and say, we've regulated the industry, and all in sundry need to abide by the rules.
When can we see Metre Taxi drivers having this app uploaded? When can we see this app being rolled out? And when will we, as Joe Blog in the public, be able to start making use of Metre Taxis? And will we see a saving eventually?
Absolutely. You know, it's going to happen very soon. We are actually looking at launching in the middle of next month. But what we wanted to do first was to ensure that when we do launch the product, the drivers are ready. We don't want a situation where the drivers themselves are not ready, because we want the service to be excellent. We want it to be professional, and we want it to be a far departure from what it used to be, because now we are taking them into the 21st century, and we say, okay guys, now you have the technology, you have everything at your disposal, go out and compete, but at the same time provide an excellent service. That is what it's about.
Well, on that note, I think it's applicable that we let the people find out more about the technology. How do they find out more about Yuku, and more specifically Yuku Ride?
Look, you can go onto the website. It's www.ride.yuku.org. Go and have a look at the website. And from at the end of this month, one can passively start to make bookings for rides. There are going to be lots of incentives, lots of giveaways. We're going to be rolling out a sort of a small roadshow. And then we're going to launch the application in conjunction with the Metre Taxi Association, who essentially are our partners. So we are very, very excited at this product, and hoping very soon that it hits the market and people are accepting of it, and that they must start to look at both sides. And then they need to start to have a different mindset, because we come as a solution. We don't come to create more animosity in the market. We come to ensure that our customers and all paying customers are safe and will enjoy the service.
Well, you know what? This country at the moment is the tale of two stories, and it's good to see that there are things happening that makes for a more positive outlook. I'd like to talk about an article that was published in Business Day in September 2016 by Mike Schussler. And this is a very interesting article because we always talk here about the income, the poverty, etc. in South Africa, but there's so much else going on. So I'd like to quote from Mike Schussler's article. He says here, while we may be an income-poor nation, we are asset-rich. And one of the most significant aspects of this is that we have a relatively high home ownership rate of 66.4%. This is despite 12% of our population staying in traditional areas where individuals cannot own their own homes. Obviously, that's because the land is under control by the tribal authorities. Mm-hmm. Since this is really one of the most amazing development stories to come out of an emerging market. A population with a median age of about 25 years has a home ownership rate of well over 60%. That is, for us, is amazing. 78% of South Africans live in formal houses, which is far higher than most other emerging market countries and certainly higher than anywhere else on the continent. Only 14 of those are actually RDP houses. So when you're throwing these figures out, everybody thinks, well, it's because of the RDPs. RDPs contribute a lot, but only 14% of formal houses in South Africa.
But doesn't that tell you, Chad, the power of propaganda? Because whenever you watch an article being shown about South Africa, they show you the squalor. They don't show you about emergence. They don't show you about what is new, the emerging middle class that is coming up, the economy itself and how it's been diversified and how it's been shared. So there's a lot that is positive.
Well, he goes on to say the number of formal houses in 2002 was 8.6 million, but by 2013 there were 12.6 million formal houses. This was an increase of 4 million formal sector houses, and there are now presently more formal houses in South Africa than the actual total number of households that there were in 2008. A key finding of the latest research shows that formal residential property still accounts for nearly three-quarters of property owned in South Africa and grew from an estimated 3 trillion rand at the end of 2010 to 3.9 trillion now. For the first time, the research also considered informal residential property, although it has no value, which was quantified by the number of households provided by Department of Human Settlements. We have one of the highest home ownership rates in the world, and 30% of South Africans state that they have a second home, which compares to only 4% of European households. Our houses are not small either. 6.5 million households have six or more rooms. Out of just more than 15 million households, that's over 40%. And households have shrunk from 3.4 people. It used to be 4.7 as far back as 1996. So there's a lot there, but one has to think about the bonds and the mortgages.
Correct. Yes.
And this is interesting because the South African Reserve Bank says that household mortgages are currently 862 billion rand, which means that the value of houses is 2.5 times that of the mortgage debt. Yes, we funded our assets with debt, but it's not irresponsible debt. It's something tangible.
Correct. Yes.
So it's not all bleak.
Yeah.
We hear about the recessions. We hear about the infighting. We hear about the corruption. We hear about the nepotism. When do we hear the good news?
Yeah. Well, you've got to preach it, Chad. You know, you've got a new dispensation, and one expects change overnight. It doesn't work. It takes a long period, because it's a period of suffering first before one can actually enjoy the actual prosperity that goes into the labor. So certainly are exciting times, and I'm excited for what is to come.
But what you said is so important. Look, good news doesn't sell unless you have a story to tell and you've got the money behind it to back it up. And a case in point would be that of the Meter Taxi Association. I did not know until I started chatting to you about it that there are 180,000 formal taxi drivers who are registered in good standing with the state, who have paid for their permits, and who are breadwinners for their families. And the potential loss for 180,000 people is when you start quantifying the households that are reliant on them for income. So you're talking 180,000 people times four. And yes, that excludes the extended families in the rural areas that have been supported as
well.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. There are add-on industries that are associated with this.
We're talking half a million people.
Half a million people being affected to benefit a few. And it just doesn't make sense to me. So I think the public at large need to understand. Yuku Technologies is proudly South African. This is Yuku country, and it is not a company from overseas that's going to come and take the lion's share and make people suffer. We will certainly fight, but not in the manner in which they have been doing in the past. We will fight with the technology that we have introduced, and we are hoping that it restores parity and gives these people a fair chance to make a good living.
Kenny, in closing, when will you know from government that the new legislation's been put into place? Obviously, they don't want to change laws, but there is laws already for the industry. But when will it be rolled out that we know exactly what's going to happen with online apps, meter taxis, etc.?
Well, at this stage, I mean, we still are in talks, and there is difficulty with trying to put a date on it. But once they know, it will be gazetted, it will be published, and it will hit a newsstand, I suppose, near the nearest person. Also, it will get out to social media. But continue to watch the space as far as Yuku is concerned and Yuku Technologies, and that is where you're going to get all the information you need.
Kenny Niemek, soccer star, radio presenter, television sports commentator, and now lead brand ambassador, chief operations officer, Yuku Ride. Always a pleasure to have you in studio.
Thanks, Chad.
You've been listening to Corruption Busters. I'll be back next week, Monday, same time, same place.